It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes it off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby!
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
Open at the 35, racing to the 20, 10, touchdown Raiders!
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT, as we start off a new week here on the flagship of the silver and black. Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM, and you can stream the show live and watch it on Twitter and on YouTube, JT the Brick on X, and on YouTube, JT the Brick YT. And it'd be kind of cool because what we're doing here is we have a chat room where everybody's making new internet friends. Bobby's very careful with the new internet friends he makes over the years. Very cautious with that, so am I. But you can get into the chat and maybe make some friends to have a beverage with or go to a game with. Or talk sports with for a couple hours a day, and we appreciate that. It should be a fun week. Later on in the week, we're going to debut our summer radio topic series on the greatest and most influential drafted players in Raider history. So the players who have been drafted by the Raiders will kind of spearhead it into a top 10, because everybody has to have a top 10. David Letterman came up with the top 10. Everybody copied it. We have Mount Rushmore. So we'll come in with a top 10 of the 10 most influential and important Raider draft picks of all time. And we're going to tell stories about certain players and the magnitude of their efforts for the Raiders when they were drafted. You get extra points if you're a late round pick and you're a Hall of Famer, or you might get extra points because you're a high round pick and you won Super Bowls. So a little bit complicated, as Bobby and I got the master list from a couple of people and started looking at it and said, oh boy, this is a long list. And we're not going to mention everybody who's ever got drafted by the Raiders. With all due respect, Cleveland Farrell will not make my list of the top 10 most influential, but a good guy, nice guy. Damon Arnett will not make my list of the most important. I saw Arnett got a job somewhere. Was it Houston? I saw that the other day. But it's going to be the players that came in with drafted by the team and then went on to some form of excellence. Remember, the greatness of the Raiders is in its future. I just emceed the draft class luncheon, which was fabulous. I want to thank Doug, who sat in for me on Friday for the first hour. He was at that, and we had a nice conversation about this group. Because on my Facebook memories, right around this time of year, every morning I hit my birthdays. I wish everybody a happy birthday on Facebook. And then I hit my memories, and I find pictures from 13 years ago. I was in Telluride. Seeing John Fogerty at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival. I wouldn't remember that. Popped up on Facebook. And I also saw some of the other draft class luncheons that I've hosted with guys like Alex Leatherwood and others. And they're in the picture with me, and now they're not even playing or they're gone. And this group seems to be pretty special. This group seems to be a really good group, and we're excited about that. And let me formally welcome everybody into the dead zone of Sports Talk Radio, a term that I came up with, no one else did, my term, over 20 years ago, the time when the NBA Finals ends until the start of football. That could be college or pro. We kind of say pro. College will start before that, but we're in the dead zone. And I don't do cheeseburger reviews, and I don't sit here and do my top streaming shows. I grind through this time of year. A lot of people say they grind. No, I fill in on other shows and do this show as much as I can. We got a little vacation coming up for the 4th of July. I'll be heading back east to see Mom and Dad, which is the priority of my life. And then we'll be back here for Raiders training camp. And right around that time, we'll be wrapping up our summer series on the draft picks and all of that. And then I'll dive into what will be exciting. We're going back for Eric Allen's induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. How cool is that? How cool is that? And then I'll be able to do the play-by-play in the preseason on radio as Jason Horowitz goes to TV. I'm looking forward to prepping for that. We have three preseason games that I'll be on the call for. And then we dive into football season, which will be every Monday through Sunday for me. Only day off will be Saturday until after the Super Bowl. And that's what the schedule looks like. So I hope everybody had a great weekend. Yesterday, before I end up getting to the NBA Finals, we had that heat wave break where it went from 102 or 3 down to like 80. My son had friends in the pool yesterday. We got Grimaldi's. We got six large Grimaldi's pies, Bobby. Six large. There was six boys over the house, 21 to 22. My wife and I had a couple of slices and a Caesar. The boys ate all six pizzas. So they pretty much ate a pizza each at Grimaldi's, the best pizza I ever had. And then the weather was so nice that it was so pleasant in June to be in my backyard brick, and not say, oh, it's so hot. God, could it be like that every day the rest of the summer? No, it will not. But could it be like that the rest of the summer? It is 87 degrees today, man. It'll be 103 by Sunday, 104, but take advantage of this weather. Get outside and enjoy it. It is just totally perfect here in Las Vegas as we open up this week. Got some Raider information to talk about. I want to make this clear. This is not a podcast. After the show, it turns into a podcast. Isn't that funny? Like, we'll do a live two-hour radio show, and then they'll tell me, the suits will say, well, your podcast did really good the other day. Well, I don't care. I do the radio show. If it lives in a podcast, beautifully. But I do not talk about Raider injuries on my live radio show on the flagship. So the people who are asking me about Christian Wilkins or this or that, I am not a doctor. Am I not a trainer? I don't get involved with players' money, injuries, or health. It's done me really well for 28 years. This is the time of year where people get in trouble because they want to talk about the Raiders when there's nothing to talk about, and they get in trouble. I've seen it up close. People just get in trouble because they just feel like they got to talk Raiders. I do not have to talk Raiders. I don't have a boss over me saying the first 20 minutes has to be Raiders. It'd be nice if it was. I got a little bit of Raiders today. But you might have heard they're on vacation. Everybody's gone. And they're figuring out their lives before they come back. And we got the NBA Finals and some baseball to talk about, and what we're going to do with the draft picks coming up here. So for the Raiders, we have this Pete Carroll soundbite as he was on a podcast with Marshawn Lynch and I think Mike Robb talking about the division going forward, like reseeding in the playoffs and the power of winning a division. Listen to this.
I wasn't voting game. For that other rule, you know. I was voting for the division winning. I just like the structure. Smart, you know. I'm old fashioned about it, maybe, but whatever. But I like the structure, and I like the championship within the championship. You know, That's just part of it. Remember, I always said, you know, own the NFC West was our deal, and own the AFC West is what it is now. Remember what we did with it? Remember the freaking game? Nobody would ever have thought we. You know, saying, "Oh, this is the worst matchup in the history of the NFL, and we're going to get murdered."
Yeah, so I'm old school too, like Pete Carroll, with a lot of things about sports. I am old school. I am not a boomer. I'm not the get off my lawn guy. Okay? All right? If you saw me at the Hall of Excellence party sitting next to Belichick and his girlfriend, I'm not the get off my lawn guy. I can talk about anything that 18-year-olds talk about or people my age. I don't like when people mess with my sports. I don't like when they change the rules. They take the kickoff and they change it. They put a ghost runner on second base in baseball. They want to restack the NFL playoffs and do it seeding-wise instead of winning the division and getting a home game. Lay off my sports. Get your stinking paws off of my sports. Stop touching it every year. Some think it's cool. We got to evolve. No, we don't. We don't have to evolve. We got three wild cards in baseball now. What do you want, five? We don't have to touch anything in football anymore. The game's worked out great. You want to move games to Germany and Sao Paulo, Brazil? I can deal with that. Stop changing the rules. Pete Carroll said he's old school. You win the division. If you win the division with eight or nine games, you host a home playoff game. You can't reseed. You don't know strength of schedule. Some years you might be playing a schedule where one of the quarterbacks might break his leg and you can win and sweep him in the division when you normally would lose to. You don't have to change sports. You don't have to. But we decide to do that. The commissioner of baseball's in town here for the groundbreaking of the A's. We are not the A's flagship, so I'm not going to dive into that. But this is a commissioner in baseball that's changed the sport radically, radically in the last 5 years. Radical stuff. I'm not talking about putting up nets down the outfield line. I'm just talking about wild cards, seedings, ghost runners, post-COVID rules, strike zone, computer strike zones. I mean, wow, how do you keep up with all this? So I wanted to lead with that with Pete Carroll because getting to know him, and I do not know him well, but I've met him now a number of times and interviewed him a few times. he is an old school guy when it comes to his history with Bill Walsh and Al Davis and the history of the league, but he relates really well to young players. He really does. Wow. Everybody has said the building has changed. Now, over the years, I've been in the building and have access, but I'm not there 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. But when I'm in the building and I talk to people, every time there's a new head coach, hope springs eternal. New head coach comes in because the old coach got fired. You get behind the new coach, you want him to do well, and then the cycle goes on and on. Now we got a guy here that is a proven winner. He relates well to young guys in their 20s, and he relates well to businessmen in their 70s and 60s. He's the perfect coach at this time. Now, Ben Johnson, if you look at him when he was going to maybe come from Detroit to the Raiders and there was interest, he ended up in Chicago. If I asked everybody to go back in the hot tub time machine, go back 3 months with me, or whatever it was before Ben Johnson and Pete Carroll got hired. If I put a survey out there and said, who would you rather have, Pete Carroll or Ben Johnson, I think Ben Johnson would have won. I think more people would have said, you know, Pete's out of the league. He's consulting, but he's not coaching. Ben Johnson's the hot coordinator from Detroit. Let's get him. So that was the hot tub time machine 3 months ago. Now come to today. The show's live today. I think the majority of Raider Nation is thrilled to have Pete Carroll over Ben Johnson. Am I right to say that? And why would I be right to say that? Because now we've met Pete Carroll. We see his culture and what he's doing with this organization, and it's a comfortable fit for diehard old school Raider Nation, the diehards, and the young fans who are like, man, this guy's really cool. Max loves him. Jackson Powers Johnson loves him. Ashton Gentry loves him. And you're a Raider fan. You want to see harmony. You want to see peace and harmony in Raider Nation. You're already up to your ankles in alligators fighting off Denver, Kansas City, the Chargers. You don't want to have fight on fight within Raider Nation. So every offseason is usually pretty quiet. Correct? Like, every offseason's pretty quiet unless there's an injury or unless there's a DUI or unless there's an arrest. I'm not talking the Raiders around the league. Domestic violence. Someone retires suddenly. You know, T.O. doing sit-ups in the driveway, throwing Donovan McNabb under the bus. Barry Sanders retiring before training camp. I was live on the radio that day. It was one of the wildest days I've ever seen. Barry Sanders just quit? Oh, he quit. He quit on this day? So we don't want to have anything other than peace and tranquility in Raider Nation for the next 6 weeks. Want everybody to come back healthy. Don't want anybody to get DUI. Don't want anybody to do something that finds them on TMZ. And this is a good group. And then come back ready to roll. And then just start stacking great practices after great practices. I'm more comfortable now because there's distance between. I don't hide anything from you. I don't hide any secrets. There's some fans who know more than I do. There are fans that go to players' houses. They might know something I don't know. But what I can tell you is last summer, as we were in Costa Mesa, practice sucked in general. There weren't many good practices. You don't need Vinny Bonsignor or Paul Gutierrez or me to tell you that. It wasn't fun. It was fun to be on the beach in Costa Mesa and go to Balboa Island and have some cervezas and Modelos and cruise around with a T-shirt on because it wasn't 109 like it was in Vegas. I love that. I love me some Costa Mesa and Napa. But last year, the practices were not good because the offense was awful. They were terrible in training camp because Max Crosby was wrecking the practices. No one could figure out how to run any offensive plays without Jackson Powers Johnson and Colt Miller. Devontae wanted to take some vacation, had the right to do it because the baby was on board. His baby was being born. He wasn't around for much of it. And then the next thing you know, Raiders start off, okay, they were 2-2 last year. Everybody remember that? They were 2-2, then lost 10 in a row. Oh, I knew. I was there every Monday with Rich Gannon and Eric Allen at 7:30 in the morning doing the recap of the 10-game losing streak. That was not easy. And it was hard on Raider Nation. It was difficult on this radio show. And I wanted to give this rant and monologue on the first day of the dead zone to tell you how happy I am with the peace and tranquility of Raider Nation. I met Tom Brady Wednesday night at the big event over there at the Hall of Excellence. Had a short conversation with him, Jim Gray, Mark Davis was there, talked to a couple of people, and everybody was in a really good place. So when it comes to the status of Christian Wilkins, I have no idea. I don't know if he's 100%, if he's 50%. I have no idea. You can go to a podcaster for that, and maybe they'll guess right. Maybe they know better than me. They could know more than me. I'm no expert. But what we're trying to do here is keep the level of anger and negativity to a small, small level. Because last year, it was super negative. It was super loud. It wasn't enjoyable. This never feels like a job for me. I'll never take this for granted. I love what I do for a living. I'm the luckiest guy in all of media. But we're good. So again, I got to fill 2 hours of radio. People don't call unless they get free T-shirts this time of year or a button. I don't do any of that crap. We're not going to rate cheeseburgers. We're not going to talk about what we're streaming, where four people who shouldn't be allowed on radio are going to tell you what they're watching on TV. None of that happens with me. I put my head down. I do sports talk radio. I talk sports. And it won't be Raiders throughout the summer every day. Some days it'll be 2 hours of Raiders. So come with me on this ride because we need you. We're a participation sports talk show. You men and women should understand sports and what you love about sports. So fire away at me. Everything's wide open other than players' personal lives, the money that they make, and their health. You want to rip on a player? You want to rip on a coach? If you keep it respectful, we'll do that. But just don't make it personal. Last year, it got very personal. Y'all loved Antonio Pierce until he lost 10 in a row. Then you wanted him out. You loved him. You showed up in the parking lot. You asked for his autograph. You loved him. He lost 10 in a row. You wanted him out. Now we got Pete. Competition Pete. Come Pete. Everything's cool with him, mellow, but hardcore competition at practice. And isn't it a great time to be a Raider fan? It's been hard for 20-plus years not winning playoff games. It is. This is a fan base that deserves greatness at every turn. I think the greatness is coming. I really do think the greatness is coming because of the layer of Tom Brady as a minority owner, who's just one of the sharpest guys in the room. He won that Fanatics competition against all the athletes. Tom Brady won $1 million at that Fanatics Fan Fest, competing against all the other athletes. Incredible what this guy's life is like. Met his dad. His dad was unbelievable. Pete Carroll and John Spytek seem to be the right guys at the right time to relaunch the Raider Nation. The schedule's okay. We got two Monday Night Football games that are cool, right? We can beat anybody on any given Sunday. We got Gino. Gino's an historian. I put out that reel. My son did. Gino studies everything. Max is healthy. We all know the offensive line is improved. I don't know how good they are, but they're improved. Right? The linebackers are improved. We got three starting linebackers now who are pretty good. Like, they're really good players. I don't know if they're going to go to the Pro Bowl, but they're okay. We got a young secondary where I don't think they're done yet. I don't think the Raiders are done. I think if they find a player from another team that gets cut due to financial reasons or he gets beat out by a younger player, but the player's better than what we have, I think that John Spytek will look at that player. And then we have the combination of Brock Bowers and Ashton Jeanty, where people around the league are scratching their head going, oh boy, what is that? Ashton Jeanty and Brock Bowers are going to combine for 30 targets a game. 30. Between both of them. You don't think one of those two guys aren't going to have a great game every other week? Chip Kelly's going to get them the ball on top of all the other guys who are going to want to get the ball. So there is a lot going on here, and I'm excited about it. I wanted to lead with the NBA Finals quickly. This is such a massive topic. It really is. Please listen. I'll try to describe it the best way I can. When you are injured as an athlete and you decide to play, you can end your career. Tyrese Halliburton blew out his Achilles because he had a calf strain. Remember when Clay had this and Kevin Durant? It starts off with a calf strain. Your body can't figure out, your Achilles can't understand why one side of your body is stronger and the other side you're favoring. And the next thing you know, I'm not a doctor, but your Achilles pops. And you're 25 years old, you might never be the same player. So as Stephen A. Smith said earlier in the series, when Halliburton in Game 5 didn't show up, he was like minus 18, and Stephen A. at halftime said, shut him down. Shut him down. He's not good enough to go. Let someone else come off the bench, T.J. McConnell. Let him score 19 points because Halliburton doesn't have anything. Then they let Halliburton play in Game 7 and his career's in jeopardy. He'll come back from the Achilles, but a lot of guys are never the same because it's an Achilles injury. We hope he's going to be okay. So in hindsight, he shouldn't have been playing. He was injured. He wasn't near 100%. He put his career in jeopardy to play for you and I, to entertain us on television in a Game 7, and it came back to haunt him. Let's play, and we do have the injury, and I'll get to that a little bit later on. The Halliburton injury, I'll get to that. But this was all about Shea, SGA.
He took Shea now giving it 8 to shoot. Steps back, fires.
This has to do with Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He dominated the game. He was the best player on the court.
Shea now giving it 8 to shoot. Steps back, fires, angle right, rainbow three is on the way. It's a Ching of Thunder Moneyball. Is Shea like a shark smelling blood in the water? He may be, baby. 25 now, 84-68, Thunder by 16.
Yeah, they just started blowing open the game. They blew it open, and they just walked away in the second half of the game. There was no Halliburton. Chet Holmgren, you know, you never know if he's going to show up or not. He's still such a young player, but he was attacking the rim in the fourth quarter to put it away.
It's 94-84, 10-point game with 2:29 to play. Holmgren in front of the pack to the rim, dunks with the right hand. Chet, don't be so mean. A sledgehammer slam. OKC by a dozen.
Yeah, they were ahead by a dozen late in the game, and without Halliburton, they just couldn't come back. And Indiana couldn't do it. Final call as OKC becomes one of the youngest teams in NBA history ever to win a title.
Thunder fans feel this moment. The uncommon young team proves to be unstoppable. It's over at Paycom Center. Final in Game 7. The Thunder 103. The Pacers 91. A dream realized. The storybook season is complete. The final chapter reads, the Oklahoma City Thunder are the 2025 NBA champions.
All right, so that's OKC Thunder Radio on the call. And Rick Carlisle, after the game, talked about the fight that Indiana had. It was a beautiful playoffs for Indiana, man. They went through my Knicks. They went through everybody. They played unbelievably epic basketball, but came up short.
Nembhard hit the shot at the end of the first half to give us a one-point lead. You know, we needed to come out of the locker room and be better in the first 5 minutes of the third quarter. We just weren't. I don't have the whole sequence of events, but they made some great plays. You know, we got off to a slow start, and that quarter was the killer. And then, to me, the fourth quarter and the effort that our guys poured into the fourth quarter to win the quarter by 1 point was epic. And it was symbolic of what this team stands for. What basketball in Indiana stands for. There was no surrender. It was just, it was all defiant fight to the end.
Yeah, there was a lot of fight there. There was a lot of fight there, but they came up short. And that's another topic I wanted to get in here as we're brought to you by PT's. They fuel the monologue. 5 to 7, midnight to 2, the best happy hour in town. Head on out to PT's to cool off, to watch sports. There are other sports on. There's baseball. There's plenty of stuff to watch there. PT's fuels the monologue. And here's the topic that can get you all involved. What was the worst series you ever lost as a fan? You lost the game. You lost the elimination game, but you felt great about your team's effort. It's a great topic because I'm not good at that. When I lose, I freak out. I have to walk around the block. My wife says, take a walk, and I got that from my dad. Yankees lose on a broken bat base hit by Luis Gonzalez to lose the World Series. My Yankees, that was 9-11 in New York, 9-11. They lost out in Arizona. Oh, the Yankees had a great year. They brought the city together. It was amazing. They went to 7 games. No, no, no. They fought hard. They lost. I struggled with that for years. The Raiders lost Super Bowl 37 to Tampa Bay. They got blown out. Okay, they worked really hard to get there. They won the AFC Championship, which was amazing, in Oakland. There was no moral victory in that Super Bowl. It was brutal. But has there ever been a series that you lost that you felt good about your team? Where you said, you know, we lost to a better team. We lost, but we played great. I love my team more than ever. I want you to help me out with that one because I struggle with it, and maybe a few of you callers don't. and you respect, you're not happy that you lost. But you had that step back. I told you the story about my son, game one of the World Series. Freddie Freeman hit the walk-off grand slam. And I was just in shock. I was in physical, emotional shock until my son and I got a pizza delivered to the room, and we sat there and ate a pizza. My son said, "Dad, we're good. We had a great day today." And I kind of snapped out of it. I was like, "Yeah, we had a great day. We went to the World Series. We saw something really cool, but we lost. It took me a while." I believe that Indiana should feel really good about where they came from to get to a fourth quarter of winning an NBA title with their best player out until next season, the season after with the torn Achilles. 702-365-9200. We like to use our phones here. We like to hear from people. 702-365-9200. We got a good show. Mark Anderson will join us from the AP. We'll also have Bill Krakenberger, America's favorite sports gambler, and Mark Lawrence, the great NBA insider from NBA Radio, at the top of the hour.
They behave like champions. They compete like champions. They root for each other's success, which is rare in professional sports. I've said it many times. I'm going to say it one more time. This is an uncommon team, and now they're champions.
Yeah, Mark Daigneault, who's the coach of Oklahoma. And if you look at the Florida Gators in basketball, they had a brand new coach who won a championship. So when you look at coaching, normally coaches, I think coaches have a lot to do with teams winning. I'm a big believer in great coaching. So Mark Daigneault is a guy that most people don't know. You would not recognize him if you walked past him in an airport. You would not know his name. You wouldn't recognize him. He'd look you in the eye and walk right past you. And now he is an NBA world champion head coach. What did he do? He took a very young team, molded him into a championship team. That is hard to do. Mark Anderson from the AP is kind enough to join us. And Mark, just a couple of things I wanted to jump out with and start off. NBA Finals, more and more people come up to me saying the NBA is going to come to Vegas. There'll be some type of look with LeBron. And are you sensing anything with Jeannie Buss selling a portion off and getting that extra $10 billion that they could possibly be a part eventually of a Las Vegas team?
I haven't heard that. That's interesting you bring that up. That would... I was well. First of all, thank you for mentioning my Gators just
yes.
now.
Yes.
But yeah, I was stunned that she sold the team. I just thought that I always felt like it wasn't really a business to her. It was more. She felt that team was a part of her family. So, but I guess $10 billion is $10 billion. But maybe you know what I've heard is maybe. I think they would want more local ownership. Obviously, you mentioned LeBron's interested. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Bill Foley puts in a really strong bid for an NBA expansion team. And I do think they're coming. I think they're coming here in Seattle. That's what all the indications are. The commissioner's even mentioned both those cities by name. So the fact he's done that is pretty telling to me. Obviously, your ownership group from another city could come in with an offer that the NBA just can't turn down. So that's always possible. But right now, I think it's two cities are getting teams.
Yeah, I what's interesting to me is I want the NBA to come to Vegas, and I think it would only work in Vegas because Vegas is such a tourist destination, different than baseball. Football, you only have 9 or 10 games a year, but with basketball, with 40-plus games in the playoffs, you could have people fly in regionally to see games in Vegas, and the tourists will buy tickets to the NBA more easily than other sports here. Do you think they need a face of the franchise eventually here in Vegas like LeBron James? Or what you said, local ownership, and some it could be Mark Davis, Bill Foley, whoever it is, that'll be enough to empower the city to support a team?
Yeah, I think you're talking face of the franchise. I think you're talking you should be more of a player. I think LeBron owned the team. I don't think really most people would care, frankly. I do agree that basketball would work here. I was at the Aces Fever game yesterday, sold out crowd at T-Mobile, a tremendous atmosphere. But to your point about the tourists, I mean, you go to Golden Knights games, you know, and they have that part in the third period where they always, you know, have the locals cheer and the tourists cheer. And there's always a big crowd from the tourists. And so They even now, the Golden Knights really rely pretty heavily on out-of-towners, even with all the success they've had. So I think Las Vegas, I still think it's more of a basketball city, even though the Golden Knights will always have a special place in this city as the first team in and all the success. But I do think basketball would work really well here.
Mark Anderson joins us from the AP. So I wanted to get you in here today. As we take a break, we'll take a break with you for a couple of weeks on just your big takeaway. Now, all the practices you attended, the OTAs, the podium sessions, getting to know this group, does it feel different? And before I get to the coaches, I'll start with the players and the rookie class. Does this feel different than some of the other classes you saw come into this organization since they moved to Vegas?
A little bit. I think there's more of a sense of urgency now, which you don't often get with a new coach. A lot of times a new coach feels like he has a little bit more of a runway, but Pete Carroll made clear from day one that that's not his thinking, and you can just see it out there. There's an urgency out there that I just haven't seen really before when they've had a coaching change. Mm-hmm. I think the offense is going to be better. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be in the level of the Bills or the Ravens, but I think it's going to be better. I think they're going to win, a decent number of games, maybe even get into playoff contention. Wow. My big concern is on defense. I don't know what's happening with Christian Wilkins. Mm-hmm. I don't know when he's coming back, if he's coming back, how he'll be when he comes back. Malcolm Kuntz had that one great half a season. Well, is that really who he is? We'll see. I don't think they're better at linebacker. I think those two losses were huge. I don't think they're bad at linebacker. I think they did a good job replacing Spillane and Diablo, but I think I don't think they're terrible. I mean, it's not a big drop off, but the secondary I think is a really big concern. They could wind up being really good, but I don't think they will be immediately. And so I think there's going to be a lot of growing pains there. So I think the offense overall will be better than the defense. I'm not sure. I could see it's taking a step back, but I don't think this would be a 4-win team. I think it's going to be at least a 7 or 8 win team, and who knows, maybe they pull off an upset to get to 9. But and if you do that, you're in playoff contention.
Yeah, I agree. As Mark Anderson, as we wrap it up, if you look at the defensive side of the ball, and Landon Roberts can play and Devin White can play, these are guys that you can plug in place, and they're not guys that are bad players looking for one last stop. These are guys who have had success in the league. The concern for me is the secondary and cornerback, and I was with Darian Porter the other day. I'm telling you, as you know this, he is special. I mean, just the way he carries himself with his length and all of that, but I don't know if he can play NFL corner at a level that he'll be good in year one or year two. And then Isaiah Palamal, I believe, was worked really hard to get to this position to be a starter in this league. Can he handle the starting reps for 17 weeks in a row to go on the back end with Jeremy Chinn? That's a question mark for me.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, Palamal in a short sample size last season was really good.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, we saw it with Zamir White. Once Zamir White got the full-time job, he wasn't what we saw at the end of the 2023 season. So, you know, it's a whole different deal when you're the guy. But I agree. I think they did a really good job bringing in the replacements of linebackers. I just Diablo was brought something special. I thought, and so did Spillane. And I just don't know that you. It's hard. It's just hard to replace those guys. But the one good thing is, if you're going to take a big hit, you'd want to be at linebacker on defense, because you can kind of make up the difference.
Yeah, Mark, I agree with you. Mark Anderson's our guest. Before we let you go, I like what you said about the offense. I think the offense, and I don't want to use dramatic terms like save the season. We haven't played a preseason game yet, but if this offense is moving the change on 3rd and 5 and not punting and not giving the other team the ball, and those are 3 or 4 additional drives, 3 or 4 plays times 3 more a game, you're getting 10 or 12 more plays because Geno's just picking up first downs with Ashton Jeanty easily on the ground, or Brock Bowers, Jacoby Myers picking up 3rd and 4s and 3rd and 6s, where the offense is ball controlling more and scoring more points in the red zone, that can save the secondary. And a team that in a 21-all game with under 3 minutes to go, if they don't have the ball, where the Raiders are counting on the defense to win the game, I'm comfortable with this offense putting games away before the 5 minute mark in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, if you could take minutes off the clock, you can shorten the game that way too. I mean, and then that your defense isn't at high risk. So I don't necessarily think the defense is going to be bad, but I do think there are concerns. And if they get Christian Wilkins back and he's like we think he's going to be, and Malcolm Kuntz played like he did a couple years ago, you know, and you know Chin plays really well, and Porter shows why he's starting as a rookie. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe second half of the season, that should be a really good defense. We kind of saw that last year. Now, granted, they played a list of bad offenses during that stretch, but I'm still impressed that Patrick Graham got as much of that defense as he did at the end of last season with all the losses, and their pass rush actually improved. So the one thing I know that's going to happen is they're going to be pretty well coached.
Yeah, I think the coaching is really unique, and I could say elite because I think Pete Carroll's elite, and I think Patrick Graham's going to be a head coach this time next year. I'd be shocked if Patrick Graham, with the seven new hires that they're going to make next year, as he was a finalist for Jacksonville, I'd be shocked if he wasn't a head coach, and I'd like to see this team do something special. Mark, enjoy a couple of weeks off. I know you're never taking time off. You're at all the sports events in here in town, but we'll catch you right when we kick off training camp, okay?
I look forward to it. Thank you, JT. Take care of yourself.
You got it. Always a thrill to talk to Mark Anderson, who's a journalist, really highly respected in this town, and has a lot to say about sports. His concern is the secondary. He's not thrilled with the linebackers, and he's concerned about the secondary. Okay, that's good, honest reporting. Not sitting here telling you, rah-rah, the linebackers are better and the secondary's better. He's concerned about that. And I don't know what I got a list. There's a few players still out there. But will the Raiders and John Spytek find a – if you're going to get another player for the secondary, I want him to be a starter. You know, I don't want him to be a guy who's going to compete, but everybody's going to compete. Everybody's competing when it comes to this. So you can take a guy who is not, you know, a starter on another team, and you can pick him up here on cutdown day and throw him into the secondary room, and Pete Carroll – in 3 weeks, might say to John Spytek, we're going to make him a starter. Well, what do you mean? Well, he's out practicing everybody. He's beating everybody at practice, a cornerback. We're going to make him a starter. There's a chance that's going to happen. There's a chance that we can go down in that direction and find another player there. I'd like Jalen Ramsey, but he's really expensive. Jim in Sacramento. Jim, thanks for waiting. Go ahead. Appreciate you.
Sorry, cut. Yeah. I watched a Pete Carroll interview with his former player, Marshawn Lynch, mm-hmm. and they were having a real heart to heart. And it really captured my attention when Peter Carroll was able to recall Marshawn's first touchdown in his first game back from a suspension, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. He's a fun player, getting these fine celebrations, Skittle Man. That said a lot about the first time into the building, Pete Carroll to the Raiders. Mm-hmm. So I have high hopes of this season.
Yeah, I think you should have high hopes. He's a coach that's going to coach the team to win, and he's going to be a better coach. He is going to be a better coach, I believe, and it's not a slight, but it's going to sound like it. He's going to be a better coach when it comes to clock management and adjustments than Antonio Pierce, Rich Bisaccia, Josh McDaniels. And I'm not going to say John Gruden, because John Gruden won a Super Bowl and Coach Gruden was pretty damn good at clock management and adjustments and all that. But Pete Carroll is older and wiser and been doing this longer and has a tremendous track record of doing this. Good. So the phones work today. We had a guest on the phone and a caller. We've accomplished the start of our day, Bobby. Got a long week ahead of us. Got a full week here. You know, I like disappearing in the summer. 2 days on, a day off, do all that. But we're going to push through here into the dead zone. I guess Vinny's in all week for Q, which is great. Q deserves a much, much deserved vacation. Everybody does. And I just hope the weather stays at this level. So I got two great guests next hour. Mark Lawrence. He's just a great NBA insider. As we put a bow, usually when the NBA Finals ends, I like to get two shows out of it, right? I want to get this show and another show about – I haven't got to Kevin Durant's deal yet. I'll get into Kevin Durant going and chasing. God, what a ring chaser he is. what a quitter Kevin Durant is in regards to quitting on his teams, but he's got a bunch of Olympic gold medals. He's got two finals MVPs with the Warriors, so he's a tremendous champion. But, oh, Kevin Durant is great at quitting on teams when he's checked out. When he's done with Brooklyn or, you know, he's done with Phoenix, oh, he's done. Wait till you hear some of the garbage he said. I think we have some Durant sound. I'll get to that next on how he's throwing the Suns under the bus like they didn't want him there. No, Kevin, you didn't want to be there. Hey, I'm wearing Astrum headsets because they're the best I've ever had. These are what the DJs are wearing when they do those enormous DJ sets. What a deal we have for you. The discount is there if you put JT the Brick into the checkout code at astrumtech.com. A couple of my friends bought them and thanked me for it. I'd like you to do the same, astrumtech.com, and get the JT the Brick discount.
Harden inbounding, gets it into Durant, left of the lane against Middleton. Puts a fadeaway over him and knocks it down. Oh, what a night for Kevin Durant. He's got 43.
Durant's one of the greatest players I've ever seen in my life play basketball. But it's a huge topic on ring chasing. And here's Kevin Durant, his comments. He found out at Fanatics Fest, at their massive fan fest that Fanatics has, one of the biggest events in sports, Tom Brady was there, the minority owner of the Raiders, and he won the competition of all the former athletes. So he won $1 million. I guess he's donating it to charity. He's given $5,000 to everyone who he competed against. Very generous there. But Durant found out when he was on stage that he was officially traded.
You know, when people can just hang your career in the balance like that and just choose what they want to do with your career is a nerve-wracking feeling. But being able to dictate what you want to do and then being with a team that values you, and I'm looking forward to it.
Kevin, people are going to hold on to that, dictate what you want to do. Did you have a hand in this?
Most definitely.
How much of it?
I mean, they asked me where I wanted to go, some of my destinations. I gave it to them, and here we are.
Yeah, so he says he has something to do with the trade, and, you know, his opinion matters. This is an entitlement league. It's an entitlement league. I don't come from a world of entitlement. My father was a conservative government accountant. He did not get me a job in media. He did not give me a job in radio, my dad. I had to start doing weekend overnights when I started. It wasn't like now where you can put on a costume and put on a chicken costume and act like an idiot and you're on the radio. You know, I'm not one of those guys. I'm not entitled. Never been, and my kids will never be entitled. Durant's entitled. He knows that he can go wherever he wants to be traded when he should be a chip. He's a commodity. He's a basketball player who plays for owners. He doesn't own his own team. He's not the minority owner of the Rockets. He gets to go where he chooses when the owner should be able to say, no, we're trading your ass to Portland or New Orleans. You don't have a word to say. If you don't want to report to those two teams, you don't have to show up. You're not my problem. I just traded your ass. But no, we're in 2025 where players get to say, I'm going to go there, and if you don't send me there, I'm going to pout, and I'm not going to go there, and I'm going to insist that I go somewhere else. Now, not everybody can pull this off. I'm talking about the level of Durant. So when you grow up in the era of Michael Jordan, or if you grew up in the era of Larry Bird and Magic, or if you grew up in the generation before that, players who built the league and made the league what it is today has given Kevin Durant now the entitlement to make the rules up when he shouldn't have the right to. Shouldn't have the right. You know, football players, if Mark Davis and John Spytek want to trade a player, the player's not going to go to Mark Davis and say, these are my three teams I want to get traded to. These are the three teams I'd like to go to, Mark. Can you trade me to those three teams? No. It doesn't work that way in football. It doesn't work that way in baseball. But it works that way in the NBA because the players are entitled with their superiority, with their contracts and their guaranteed contracts, like James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant. Who am I forgetting? Who am I forgetting are the guys that say, no, I'll tell you where I'm going. Kawhi Leonard wants to be close to L.A., so he'll play with the Clippers. Okay, Durant wants to play with Houston because they have a chance to win. Wow. Really? I mean, you Warrior fans are really interesting. You're really interesting to me. Because would the Warriors have won the titles without Durant? Let that sink in for a second. It's a great Chris and West Oakland Big Al topic. Would the Warriors have won those titles without Durant? I would say, hell no, they wouldn't have. He was the finals MVP. He wasn't the sixth man. He wasn't the third option. He beat Steph Curry out for the finals MVP. But the Warriors accepted him with open arms because he was a great player. Right? So when you get players that want to ring chase and they want to come to you, it must be nice. I'm a Knicks fan. We can't get Durant. How did my Knicks in the last 20 years not get LeBron, Durant, Kawhi, or Harden? They didn't want to play in the number one media market in Madison Square Garden? No, because the Knicks were never a contender until now. So for Kevin Durant, I think overall he's a great player. I don't have any criticism of his game, none. I just criticize people who are entitled. I criticize nepotism. I criticize entitlement and people who look to take a shortcut. And Durant's looking to take a shortcut to another title. He's not going to play anywhere else where he can't win. And Houston's one of the maybe the 5-6 teams in the league where you could win. And it's good for Kevin. And then 2 years from now, he's going to be upset and he's going to want to leave. Nick in Newark. Man, thank God we're on in Newark today. Hello, Nick.
What's up, JT the Brick? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
First-time caller, long-time listener. I actually used to sit with your good friend Chris from West Oakland back in at the Coliseum in Section 229. Hope all is well with everyone. But I just wanted to call and talk about how excited I am for the season and one specific personnel grouping for offense. 12 personnel, obviously, you know. Mm-hmm. One running back, two tight ends.
Yep.
We know who those would be. But the two wide receivers I want to see in that specific personnel group, which I know we will be Thornton and Besh. Besh, mm-hmm. because he could be kind of like a tight end three. And, you know, he can come out, break the huddle, two tight ends, double tight, put Besh as a wing and then opposite side, but Thornton. And we tell the defense, we're going to run the ball. How are you going to stop it? You know, you can come out in a 4-3 base defense or nickel, depending on how you come out. We're still going to run the ball or spread everyone out, audible.
No, I like
and, throw the ball.
Yeah, I like what you're saying because I talked to Jack about it, and I appreciate the call. We're up against it. The ability to run the ball behind two tight ends like Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers and then have Jack blocking and a 6'4" or 6'5" receiver and Dante Thornton blocking in the running game, that is impressive. That's when you would take Trey Tucker off the field, right? He's undersized, fast wide receiver and bring in the bulk. And the guys and the receivers who are strong to block. That's a good call. I agree with that. That was an hour. Mark Lawrence will join us at the top of the hour. I'm going to thank the bricklayers and everybody who's on the YouTube page. Thank you very much, as we had a good day today here. Numbers look great. Thanks for being here. I'll talk in the chat until the top of the hour, and then we'll have one more hour to go. Brought to you by La Casa Cigars and Lounge